Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 8th of November. Dante Chinney is with us. He is frequently our guest after we've had a major election because he has taken 3,100 counties in this country and broken them down into 12 demographic geographic types. And he gives us a thorough analysis of why we voted the way that we voted. He says in some of his writing after the election, and we haven't heard a whole lot about this, that he sees sharp distinctions in the wealthier, closer-in counties that he calls the moneyed burbs and the more exurban counties that we call the boom towns. We will talk about that. And, of course, we will look at the makeup of the American electorate right now changes in the number of Hispanics in this country, even number African-Americans, not as many white people in this country, and what that meant in 2012 and what it means really for the future of particularly the Republican Party. We'll be welcoming phone calls for you as we always do. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. And you can always leave messages for us on our Facebook page, which is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Dante Chinney, hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
Are you rested?
I'm catching up. I'm almost there. I'm getting there.
Yeah. Well, a lot of your work starts the day after the election, too, right, to analyze all the numbers.
Yeah, actually, it's true. And I've got a big piece to write today for the Journal, and then, honestly, there's a lot to even look at over the next, really, couple weeks here.
I'm sure. Let's talk about something that hasn't been a whole lot of the national discussion because you have broken down these counties so completely. You talk about a sharp distinction in the wealthier, closer-in counties that you call the moneyed burbs and the boom towns, the exurban counties. You broke that vote down. First, why don't you describe those counties more fully?
Yeah, these moneyed burb counties are they're slightly more populated, they're a little more densely populated than the exurban places. They tend to be closer to big cities. They're wealthier. They're slightly better educated. And a lot of people live there. About a quarter of the electorate, 24% Tuesday came from the moneyed burbs. The thing that's really shocking in these numbers is that Obama won the moneyed burbs by 7 percentage points. That's really interesting. I mean, he won them by 10 percentage points in 2008. So that's a 3% drop. But considering what he was dealing with, the economic headwinds and just generally the feeling people's feelings about the country being on the wrong track, that 7% number is much bigger than the margin that Al Gore got out of these places in 2000 and much, much bigger than what John Kerry pulled out of these places in 2004. So what I'm seeing in these numbers is these places are actually shifting to the Democrats now pretty solidly, and that's problematic for the GOP.
And what do those people do for a living?
Well, these are they're an interesting mix. So we call them moneyed burbs, so everybody thinks, well, that's so everybody's, driving Mercedes.
Right.
Well, no, not really. No, they're not. I mean, keep in mind the median household income in the United States is about $50,000. And, the median household income in these places is, it's 60 or so, or roughly 60. So these places are, they're a little better than most places in the U.S. in terms of how they're doing economically. What do they do? Some people, this is where you have people who work in the office parks who have pretty decent white-collar jobs. There are more professionals and managers. We break down some of the statistics that way in these places than in the other communities in Patchwork Nation, more there than any other place. These are just kind of good paying white collar jobs. This used to be also the place where you'd see a lot of kind of good paying blue collar jobs.
Hmm.
The boom towns are a little bit different. They're not completely exurban America, but that's a pretty good loose definition of them. They're the next ring out. A lot of those counties, they're a little further out. They're less densely populated, and they make a little less money. And they're places we call them boom towns because the population really spiked there in the first half of the last decade. And now a lot of those places are struggling a little bit with what's going on in the housing market because they boomed and now they're having a harder time. And Romney won those places. He did pretty well in there. He won those places by 9 percentage points. That's a pretty good number for him. So Obama won those inner ring money burb suburbs by 7 points, and Romney won the kind of next ring exurban places by 9 points.
But there weren't as many people living in those exurban areas as were for McCain?
He did better than McCain did. He did better than McCain did. Romney did better than McCain did. McCain won them by, just looking really quickly now, he won them by 5 percentage points. So Romney improved on that by 4 percentage points. About 21% of the votes came from those places on Tuesday. So not as many as the moneyed burbs. And, you know, that's 4% may not sound like a lot, but it's actually pretty significant in terms of the votes counted. It's that difference in the vote. The burbs are a little more significant for that reason.
And when you look at those moneyed burbs, Dante, you talk about Gore and Kerry and Obama doing better than either of the other two candidates. Is he more likable for some reason to that population?
Yeah, so here's what I think happened. And this is something that's going to take a long time to untangle. But when I look at these numbers, what do I think? Well, the moneyed burbs, because of where they are, never really suffered in the recession quite as badly as some of the other places out there. They've rebounded quicker. So the unemployment rate is lower than the national average. It's closer to 7.5, 7.4%. And these are also places where people are more heavily invested in the stock market. So when the stock market comes back, now that doesn't mean they're e-traders or something like that, but they have a lot of money in 401ks.
Mm-hmm.
So they're seeing those numbers come back, and they're getting their statements in the mail, and they're thinking, wow, things look better. So economically, I think they're feeling better than America on average, on the whole. And then the other thing about them is they are socially moderate, and this is a real issue for the GOP. They are increasingly socially moderate. These are places where being for gay marriage, if you're a candidate, is probably a good thing. It is a net positive in these places. There are also places that are much more likely to be pro-choice. And those issues like that, those are issues that are, those are challenges for the Republicans.
Did the Obama campaign put a lot of resources in those counties in this country, or were there resources elsewhere?
I think when I look at the numbers, the Obama people put a lot of resources into the big city counties, the counties we call the industrial metropolis. In fact, it's really interesting. Obama's margin in those big city industrial metropolis counties is exactly what it was in 2008. He won it by the exact same margin.
Really?
37 percentage points. He always wins, so Democrats always win those places, but that was a big margin for Democrats in 2008, and he matched it again in 2012. That's really interesting. And it looks like the thing that's really interesting, these campus and career communities, these are a lot of college towns. Dane is one of those, and Wisconsin is one of those counties. He did pretty well in those places. He won them by 14. I mean, he did very well. He won them by 14 percentage points. Not quite as well as he did in 2008 when he won them by 18 percentage points. But the thing that's really striking about these exit poll numbers from this election is 18 to 29-year-olds were a bigger part of the electorate in 2012 than they were in 2008. I don't think anybody expected that.
Isn't that interesting?
It really surprised me. And all the exit poll numbers, that was the one that surprised me the most, and it obviously came through big for President Obama.
Why do you think that happened as you look at those numbers? More young people.
Their organization efforts, you know, I was talking to somebody on Election Day about, you know, the polls were so confusing because the polls suggested to me that Obama was going to win. In fact, 303 was my informal guess as to how many electoral votes he was going to get. If he gets Florida, obviously he'll have more than that. But
you were right on the money. It's 303,
isn't
it?
Yeah, it's 303. I was really shaky on New Hampshire. I thought that Romney might have an edge. It turned out not at all. But the thing is, talking to people about it before Election Day, I said, you know, the thing that's really interesting is I think this is what he's going to get. And if you look at the polls, I think this is what it showed. But there were conservatives on the other side saying that they thought Romney was going to win, and he thought he'd get over 300 electoral votes, and I didn't see it. What happened was, and this is why the 18 to 29-year-old voters, the segment was as big as it was. The ground game for the Obama campaign, their get-out-the-vote effort, was remarkable.
Mm.
I mean, it was truly, there was all this talk about there was no enthusiasm. They knew, they weren't playing the game. The Obama campaign was not playing the game of trying to talking to the press as much as the Romney people were. I think the Romney people were really trying to win the battle in the press much more than the Obama people. I think the Obama people were looking at their numbers, they looked at their models, their statistical models, and said, we're going to win this thing. And they did it by being in these places. You know, a lot of these places they never left. You know, I was in Charlottesville the other week, which is the home of University of Virginia, down here in Virginia, and talking to people in that office, that Obama office. And the main man in that office, in the Charlottesville office, had never left. he was with the Obama. He was with Obama for America. Then he went for Organizing for America, and then they were doing the campaign again. And he could tell. He said, you know, the numbers may not show up, but we are way ahead of in terms of where we were compared to 2008, and the calls we've made and the doors we've knocked on, we're way, way, way far ahead, he told me. And at the time, you don't know what to make of that, but he seemed to be an honest guy. But at the time, you're not really sure what to make of it. But those numbers suggest that in those places where there are a lot of young people, they organized like crazy, and they really got their vote out. It's impressive.
Very yes. Impressive. So what does he do today, Dante?
Well, if the Obama people are smart, they will not walk away from the midterm elections, as I really think they did to some extent in 2010. Now, I think they did it because they were kind of trying to – they were saving up for 2012, and they thought that was a much more important election. That's gone now. There are no more elections for Barack Obama. That is, his next election is really 2014. So he's got to keep those people in place and try to get this same kind of turnout. I was out in 2010 talking to college students. And, you know, right before the midterm elections, and midterms to them were something that you took in class. They had they did not want to talk about the election. If that happens again, you know, I don't think they'll lose as much ground if that happens again in 2014 because the field has settled somewhat. But, you know, it will be a setback again for the president.
As you know, one of the main stories, and it's come as such a surprise to a lot of people who are pundits nationally, is the Latino vote. That's what everybody's talking about, and the GOP has simply got to change their strategy and their message to Latino voters. What do you think about what happened? Is that one of the main stories of this election?
You know, I knew it was going to tick up, the Latino vote, because it's you have to go back to the past three elections. The climb in the Latino vote has been very steady. It's gone from 7 to 8 to 9 to 10 in the last four elections as a percentage of the electorate on election day. So that was one thing I knew was wrong when the Republicans were talking about what was going on, and there was this really crazy column over the weekend from Michael Barone, who's an excellent, he's conservative, but he tends to be a pretty good guy statistically. You know, he's the guy behind the Almanac of American Politics. He was, you know, one of the founders of that. And he's excellent generally on numbers. And he was saying, you know, like, they're just not going to get this Latino vote out. And they're not going to turn out. And my thinking at the time was, look, they're going to turn out just because it's not a question of turnout. There are just more Latinos. You know, the percentage of the population that is Hispanic or Latino in the United States is close to 17%. So this 10%, it's not even close yet. It's going to go up again. It'll go up again in the next election. In fact, in some election, it'll probably climb by a couple of points. It'll go from 10 to 12 or from 11 to 13 or something like that. But the GOP thought that the 2008 electorate was an aberration. And I just thought that wasn't true. When I looked at the numbers, there was, you know, African-Americans were going to turn out again. This is the first African-American president in U.S.
Yes.
history. They didn't want him to be a one-termer. And the Latino vote is just going to go up again. You know, and I think there are some... And the Republican side, they're coming to some cold realizations now that they need to change their strategy, particularly with Latinos.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in, just in the Milwaukee area, from what I've heard, there were hundreds of people in the Obama campaign brought up from Chicago to target, particularly southern Milwaukee, which tends to be Latino. And I didn't hear anybody report on that, really, before
right.
the election. But obviously, this campaign, or you listen to black radio in this country, you knew the enthusiasm was there. You could hear people like Michelle Obama and Maya Angelou and others calling in and doing interviews on radio, really huge names, that there was a concerted effort in those communities. And I don't know if the Republicans didn't pay attention to that, or they just give up on that kind of vote, or they didn't work equally as hard for their constituents. But it is significant. The Democrats knew what they were doing this go around, and obviously in 2008.
This, you know what's happened, and this is what happened on election night. A lot of people are talking about the kind of the Karl Rove kind of mini meltdown on Fox News, mm-hmm. about not believing what was happening in Ohio. And I think what's happened to the GOP is, and this is particularly true, I think, with Rove, is, look, in 2004, Rove did an excellent job of bringing out this white evangelical base that we missed in the media. We missed that he was doing it. And, you know, he still thought that, like, oh, but I still have this ace in the hole. And it's like, you know, you don't really anymore. What's happened is, the Democrats learned from what the Republicans did in terms of bringing out their base, and they are doing the same thing now, and they're better at it. And for some reason, the Republicans just thought that the Democrats weren't going to do it. I don't know what they were thinking, but, you know, I think their eyes were really opened on Tuesday night as to how sophisticated the Democratic get-out-the-vote machine is, and how, particularly from with the Obama team, how sophisticated it is and how smart it is.
And what about the numbers for that evangelical base? I have heard that they were down. Were they? Was it substantial?
They were down in some states pretty substantially. Now, I will say this about the white evangelical vote and why I suspected in the end Obama was probably going to win and why he did win, is that there just isn't anything left out there. There is, you know, the Republicans have pretty much gotten every white evangelical voter that they can to get out and vote. And even if, you know, it might have been down a little bit on Tuesday as a percentage of the electorate. Now, one of the reasons it's down as a percentage of the electorate is because other things have climbed up, especially 18 to 29-year-olds and Latinos. I looked at the day before the election. I was going county by county, looking at counties where I knew there were a lot of white evangelicals. And, you know, they had a big bump in turnout in 2008. They really did. And people missed it completely. You know, they had already had their big bump in turnout. They had come out to vote against Barack Obama in 2008. It wasn't like they liked him in 2008 and suddenly they changed their minds, you know, in 2012. So I think that what happened is they declined as a percentage of the electorate because other things ticked up. And I think essentially there's no place for that part of the electorate to go. It's maxed out. They've maxed out all the votes they're possibly going to get out of white evangelicals, which is why the Republican Party has to, if they're smart, they have to start taking a tack to finding a way to win Hispanic Latino voters.
We go to phone calls for Dante, and we'll do that in just one moment. Dante Chinney is with us. Patchwork Nation is his baby. It's the journalism project that he founded, and he leads, breaking down the nation's 3,100 counties into 12 demographic geographic types. We've spoken with him on many occasions. We can break down more of those types, as we will during the course of this hour. And we're welcoming your phone calls. One line open if you'd like to join us. 800-486-8655 is the number. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today. In his victory speech on Tuesday night, President Obama said, "We want our children to live in an America that isn't threatened by the destructive power of a warming planet." Climate change was not a major issue in the presidential campaign, but it looks as though it may be on the table now, with Harry Reid's comments as well in the last day. We will be talking about the potential political will to confront this issue post-Sandy, post-drought, and post-election. All right, let's go to phone calls for Dante. Jean in Wauwatosa, hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks. I really wanted to talk more about this. I'm glad you're covering it still. I think Claire McCaskill, well, a couple things, but first off, I think Claire McCaskill said it really great when she said, there's nothing more complicated than government should reflect your values. And I think the Republicans have marginalized and demonized the people, and then you can't expect them to vote for you. The Republicans can imitate the methodology of President Obama, but with the candidates they have, they don't have the integrity to back it up, and they obviously don't have the ground game. Should Obama camp not be talking about their methods so much? Because I know imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, but I'd hate for this to come back. But then also, will there ever be an opportunity for Republicans to appeal to non-white males? It'd have to be a really fast shift, and I don't think their believability factors and integrity is there.
Dante.
Yeah, on the last part first, you know, they need to find a way to reach the non-whites is what pollsters are calling it, because it's a pretty big group. How do they do that? I don't know. What's happened is, I mean, if anybody watched this Republican primary debates, I mean, it was basically a challenge to see who could say they would be tougher on immigration. And, you know, I mean, Romney's big thing was talking about self-deportation, you know, which is basically, I make your life so miserable that you're going to want to leave. You know, that's not the way you win voters, okay? That's not the way you win voters, and that's a real problem for them. On the values point, I think it's an excellent point, and I think it's what hurt them not only with Hispanics and Latinos, but I think that's what's happening to them in these suburban areas. You know, what they're doing to win the nomination and to win these kind of rural, more rural white conservative areas, and is hurting them in suburban America. And that's because suburban America is growing more moderate and actually probably growing more secular if you look at the statistics. You know, that's a real problem for the GOP. And they're going to have to find a way to basically, you know, have I think parts of their coalition accept the fact that the Republican Party is going to have to move on some of this stuff because they just can't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They want to win. I think it's a big no-no for them. And I forget what the last question was. I'm sorry.
What was the last question, Gene? I forgot, too, at this point. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Lack of sleep still.
Imitating the methods should...
Oh, the methods, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, yeah, you know, look, the Obama campaign is very, very, very secretive with how they do this stuff, okay? And they have a lot of good, smart, statistical people. But what's going to happen is... So they're not revealing much of anything. But what's going to happen is, I mean, the Republicans are going to look at these numbers and think, okay, how can we try to mirror what they're doing? At ourselves. Now, they're not going to know the exact methods, but they're going to have to hire some smart people. And a lot of, look, it's data-driven. It's statistics-driven. And they're going to have to get much more serious about it. Because the one thing I think that was really startling out of the coming into Election Day was these predictions from conservatives that just really did not hold up with the numbers we were seeing. They didn't make sense to me. And I kept thinking at the time, like, what did they must, maybe they know something I don't know because they were smart people. But, that it shows to me that there's some kind of problem they're dealing with the statistics and the numbers, and they're going to have to get a lot more serious about that stuff.
Thanks, Gene, for the call. Mike in Appleton, hi.
Yeah, fascinating conversation. To me, it's just incredible that the Republicans would have been so, I don't know what the word is, I guess so stupid in how they handled this whole thing. I mean, from the beginning in the primaries, you know, just attacking each other, just incredibly poorly handled.
Dante.
Yeah, I think, you know, in the primaries, too, the stuff that came up, I mean, I know a lot of conservatives have said, oh, liberals keep talking about how, you know, the Republican primaries were all about birth control. That's not true. It's like, they weren't. No, that's absolutely true. They weren't all about birth control. That's an excellent point. But the fact that it was even brought up as an issue in 2012 was the problem. The idea that, like, I don't believe Rick Santorum going out there and saying the stuff he's saying about how he really doesn't, you know, like birth control or believe in birth control, or, you know, it's just like, look, that's a if you think that personally, that's fine, but it ain't going to win you any votes, you know, and with women, that stuff is really going to resonate, but not just with women. I mean, it's going to resonate, and not just with singles. It's going to resonate with married people too, who've decided they have as many kids as they'd like.
Mm.
You know, it's just it's complicated. It's very complicated.
If you could spend just a moment on maybe a Republican strategy that is being executed on a state level, like Wisconsin, that the Republicans nationally can learn from. What happened, of course, yesterday, as you know, in the state, is that the Republicans retained control now, or there was this little election where they lost it for a few months, but the Republicans
right.
will have all levels of government now, all branches of government in Wisconsin. How can that happen here, and yet nationally, Obama won in this state, and Tammy Baldwin won in this state?
Yeah, I think what you have going on, particularly at the local level in politics, you're talking about state house races and state senate races, those are much more about individuals. They really are. And I know that it's tied up with Governor Walker there, which I think even the view of Governor Walker the national view of Governor Walker is one thing. I think if you were to go, I mean, you're there. I mean, if you were to go door-to-door and talk to people who... what they think about Scott Walker, it wouldn't be so much about unions. It would be probably much more about what they think of him personally. Now, whether or not those views of him are correct or not, you don't really know anybody personally unless you actually know the person.
Mm-hmm.
But like what they think of the person, what they think of him personally matters a lot, and what they think of the people in those, what they think of the people who ran for those individual races. You know, you can do a lot by getting the right person to run in the right district. Because you're right, it's not just Obama. But it was the Tammy Baldwin victory, which is, you know, very interesting. The other thing is, you'd have to look at, and I haven't done this yet, a really good thing to do would be to overlay the county vote for Obama, I haven't done this yet, with what happened in those state house and senate seats, and look at what the vote looks like, and see if it's really ticket splitting, and you know, people voting for Obama and then voting for Republicans in the state House and state Senate, or if it's just the fact that you had huge turnout from, you know, Dane and Milwaukee and maybe a few other counties for Obama, and the rest of the state went for Romney. That's something somebody needs to get in and dig in those numbers and look at them, because that's an excellent story, I think.
Yeah. Milwaukee, 80% turnout. That has to be one of the highest ever in this county. It was huge.
Remarkable. It's really remarkable. You know, and that's again, that says a lot about the turnout machine that Obama had in place.
Yeah, it sure did. Thanks, Mike, for the call. Let's go next to Leah in Green Bay. Hi, Leah.
Hi. I'll talk fast because I have a few points. One is that at the last minute I had time on Tuesday and I went to the Democratic headquarters and said I would help, and I ended up making phone calls. And at first I thought, well, this is kind of stupid. This is election day. But it fits in with what he's saying, your guest is saying, about the machine. You know, yeah. I had a list of people that they knew were sympathetic to Obama, and they were reminding them to go and vote. So
absolutely.
You know, it fits perfectly. The other, I have two more points quickly. One is, I think one of the things to explain what happened in terms of Wisconsin is the redistricting and how they manipulated these districts. The Republicans did in private, which now has been found to be illegal. So I think that explains how some more Republicans could have been sent to the state assembly and Senate. Yep. Anyhow, and the third thing is quickly, I got into what I try to establish as a civil discourse with some very wealthy retired people in Arizona online. So I was trying to convince them of my position, and they were telling me why to vote for Romney. And they kept sending me all these horrible emails about how proving that he was a Muslim, proving that he was born in Kenya, proving he's a communist. And that's what they feed each other all the time.
All right. Thank you very much for your call. Any parts of those you want to?
Well, the last point's really interesting, because what it does is it speaks to the differences in these country in the country. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are some people for whom you could send those emails about him being a communist or a Muslim or whatever they claim he is, and it actually might have some swaying, some ability to sway the voter, but it obviously isn't any good for the caller. And that actually goes to the point of targeting. You know, you got to understand who your folks are. You got to understand who you're talking to on the phone, what your message needs to be. And one last point, it's a really excellent point about the redistricting, and that's partially what's happening at the national level too. That's, you know, the Republicans won big in 2010, and that really set them up to redistrict these congressional seats as well. And that's one reason why they're able to protect that majority. It really made a big difference for them, and you know, it helped them out a lot.
Leah talked about wealthy people in Arizona. This I find absolutely interesting, and please tell us why. You write, look at the 10 wealthiest counties in America. 8 of them voted for Mr. Obama.
Yeah, you know, that is about, and this is something that people have to keep in mind, that these statistics, when you just look at them by themselves, and you say, oh my gosh, look how well Romney did with people making over $100,000. It's like, or look, you know, one measure was, I think, what was it? Romney won people making over $100,000, and Obama won people making less than $1,000. But you know, it's like Obama won people making less than $50,000, and I think he won people making between $50,000 and $75,000. And then Romney won with these wealthier people. But you, to really understand what's going on in the numbers, you'd have to look at different groups. It wouldn't just be over $100,000. You'd have to say, what is it, 100 to 125? Now, I haven't seen these numbers yet, and they don't gather them. What is it, 100 to 125? What is it, 125 to 150? Because I think you'd see numbers in there. And, you know, as we note in here, as I note in the post I wrote yesterday for the NewsHour, that Obama won 8 of the 10 wealthiest counties in America. The other thing is, while Romney won the college vote, which people have talked about, you've got to get inside the numbers a little more, because Obama won the postgraduate vote. And you know, it's like, well, how big are postgraduates? That's no part of the electorate. It's actually, they're 20% of the electorate.
Really?
Yeah, they're not. Oh, it's 18 to 20%. They're a decent-sized chunk of the electorate. And you know, I think that you know, Obama probably does. Obama does well with very well-educated people, and those people tend to make a lot of money. To get inside those income statistics, you'd really need another two or three or four really breakdowns in the category. And I don't know if the exit polling got it. But one way to do it is to look by counties, and the county numbers are particularly interesting.
Leah, thanks for the call. Kathy in Eau Claire. Hi.
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 Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My comment is this. I consider myself an evangelical Christian, and with different people that I've spoken with over the last, we'll say, 10 to 12 years, I think many of us have come to the conclusion that we can be Christians and still vote Democrat.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if that may be also a change over the last number of years, that people who do consider themselves evangelical Christians have been thinking in different ways about different issues. And that's my question or comment.
Really quickly before you leave the line, where do you live?
I live in Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, the interesting thing to me with, because you're talking about the evangelical left, and actually the evangelical left, the person who's head of that, and you may know him, one of the heads of it, I should say, is Reverend Jim Wallace.
Yes.
Yeah.
Who's here. I mean, he's here in Washington, D.C. My kids go to school with his kids.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And he would make the point you're making. I think there's something to be said for that as a growing movement, and it's growing, and I think it's actually even growing fairly rapidly. But
yeah.
Even as it's growing fairly rapidly, compared to the overwhelming weight of the white evangelical vote, it's still a small group. Now,
okay.
10 years from now, that may not be true anymore, because there are a whole host of issues, and liberal evangelicals will say this. Like such as the environment, that they think are religious issues, and they're not taken seriously by the Republican Party, and they don't appreciate that. I also it's going to be something really interesting to watch. I try to do some research on it. I go to an evangelical community in Missouri, and I was talking to some people there about it who study the issue, and it's growing. There's no question it's growing, but it's still we were looking at the numbers around there anyway. It's still a relatively small movement. Now that may change. I mean, that really may change in the next decade.
Yes. Thank you so much for addressing my situation. Comment.
Thanks, Kathy. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Jean in Eau Claire is next. Hi, Jean.
Hi. I'm wondering if you've ever studied, you know, as you're going around between populated areas and not populated areas, and access to media. Now, I used to live in Chippewa Falls, and I had access and where it wasn't really expensive to get cable and that type of thing. And, you know, and I got a lot of information. Then I moved south of Eau Claire, and I've been studying this. And I've been watching and paying attention to radio stations. And there's corporate media in this area that is nonstop Republican propaganda-like, and that's just my analysis of it. And there's not a lot of stations. And I've checked different areas in rural areas, and that's about all that's available if you don't have a lot of money to get different types of satellite service. And I'm just wondering, I noticed in my area, Feingold lost 2-1.
Dante, you want to analyze the media?
Yeah. I pay great attention to the media as I travel the country, and I listen to local radio when I'm in town. Usually, I mean, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I listen to baseball, but I listen to local media when I'm traveling. And the caller's right. You know, you could really do there, and studies have been done. But I mean, we looked at this a little bit. You can talk a lot about the difference in a community just by going through the AM dial or the FM dial and looking at what's available for people. It will tell you a lot about a place. I think the one thing I'd say, though, is, you know, the reason why those conservative stations are on in those places, those conservative programs are on in those places, is because they think there's money to be made. You know, they have the listeners. It becomes self-reinforcing, right? The places are conservative, so that those are the radio shows that do well there, and the radio shows kind of give a certain kind of view of what's going on in the world, and that kind of reinforces the conservative viewpoint. That is very much a part of America right now. In fact, I've written about this. There's this feeling that the internet is this great leveler because it makes everything available to everybody. So everybody can just be reading the New York Times, and it's, you know, and first of all, like, liberals think that's a good thing. I mean, I think the Times is a great newspaper, but, you know, it's not for everybody. And the point is, everybody can read the New York Times. I do think that there's enough relatively inexpensive internet where almost anybody can read the New York Times, but they don't, is the truth. And the internet and what's happened with the media, even if you have an internet connection and you have everything available to you, you can read the Times, you can read the India Times if you want, you could read news from around the world, people don't. I mean, they tend to actually go to news sites that reinforce their own beliefs. So while the internet is supposed to be this thing that breaks down cultural divides and breaks down kind of the community you live in and makes you a citizen of the world, it actually is kind of reinforcing. It actually makes the communities more different than more alike, because places that are conservative tend to get more conservative because they read more conservative things. Places that are liberal tend to get more liberal because they read more liberal outlets. That's just, mm-hmm. that's what happens. It's interesting.
And in terms of those commercial stations on the radio, there is a huge divide between male and female listeners, too, that they do very well with men, but not very well with women.
Yeah, and I mean, you could see that, I guess you could talk, that's definitely some of the gender gap issue. And,
right.
I think, obviously, talk radio, it's tends to be an older audience as well, because you have to have the time to be
right.
To the radio.
Yeah. Thank you, Gene, very much for the call. We'll take more of your phone calls in a moment. Dante Chinney is our guest this hour, and he is with Patchwork Nation, which is this longstanding organization that he started, and he now does analysis on public television, and he's got a blog that you can read, and it's fascinating because it's a breakdown. He's looked probably more closely than any analyst at 3,100 counties in this country, 12 demographic, geographic types, and then breaks down our thoughts about why we vote the way we do, what are the issues that are important to us, and he's done this and is continuing to do this for the 2012 election and has come up with some fascinating things. You can read just one of his pieces, Three Quick Lessons in a Mountain of Election Data, if you go to Patchwork Nation on the internet. More phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, this caught my attention on Tuesday, and there will be discussion about this. There already has been. In his victory speech on Tuesday night, the president said, "We want our children to live in an America that isn't threatened by the destructive power of a warming planet." This, of course, was not a big issue in the presidential campaign, but there are indications that the president may take this on. Harry Reid made a comment that he would like to take this on. And there are a lot of people in the country who would like a discussion of global warming, a warming planet. So we will have two guests with us, a geographer and the director of the Nelson Institute for Environmental Studies at UW-Madison, the author of Political Ecology, and we'll also speak with a staff writer for The New Yorker, who is author of Field Notes from a Catastrophe, Man, Nature, and Climate Change. 800-486-8655 is our number. Dante Chinney is with us now, and we go next to Joan in Rudolph. Hello, Joan.
Thank you. My comment is, again, about the redistricting. When the GOP and the House of Representatives continue to say, well, the American people made a choice here, well, unfortunately, we didn't make a choice in 2010 when we didn't go to the polls and the numbers we should have, and the GOP took control of state legislatures across the nation to redistrict because of the census in the 2010. But that the real picture is what happened in the Senate. The Democrats gained 10 seats in House of Representatives, too. But the statewide election is more critical here because that's really what the state is, probably more blue than it is red. And the redness only comes from the advantage of redistricting. So the GOP could win those places that they probably weren't going to win if the districts would have stayed the same as they were. But, again, that's why it's more important to vote in every election. But, again, the GOP shouldn't take anything that this is some sort of mandate that their issues are what the American people want.
Well, that's an interesting way for us to go. How do politicians interpret votes? I mean, today, what kinds of conversations are going on? Are people saying, well, this is where the vote was. This is how many we got. We've got all the chambers. We have a political capital here now. We can do what we want. Or do they look at the nuances on both a state level and a national level, Dante?
Well, I think the first thing they do, yeah, is that at the U.S. House of Representatives, if you are a very conservative member, this is the problem of getting stuff done here. If you're a very conservative member and you won your district by 70-some-odd percent, then you say that these are the people who elected you, they know what you believe, and that's why they sent you to Washington. And if you are from a very liberal district and you got 70%, you come to Washington and say, they voted for me, they gave me a big margin, this is why they sent me to Washington. And those people have to work together to get something done.
Mm-hmm.
That's extremely difficult. I do think, though, that, you know, at the party level, when you look at the parties, not just the individual representatives who are, you know, talking about their individual seats, I think there is an understanding that, look, the country is really split. And we've got to figure out a way to get something done.
Right.
I think
there
are good people in both parties that do that. The question is, that's easier said than done. And it's really going to be hard. I think it's just going to be extremely difficult to that even if they don't read it as a mandate, the parties don't read it as a mandate. The individual people, the individual representative may read their seats as mandates. That makes getting things done extremely difficult.
And don't you think that, my goodness, that is one of the messages here. It's one of the messages that we hear just from doing a talk show day after day. Get something done, you know, get back to work, do some work.
Yeah, I mean, you'd like to see them get something done. We have some really big problems in this country.
Yes.
We aren't doing anything about them, and it is extremely troubling. But and hopefully they take that to heart. But
right. We'll see. Joan, thanks for the call. Hugh in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I want to disagree with your interpretation of where the Republicans should go. As it is now, about 95% of the blacks vote Democrat, and in the last election, 70% of the Hispanics. The Republicans are accused of being the white party, and yet they aren't. Beginning, you know, with Nixon, you've had affirmative action that gave discrimination. Affirmative action is discrimination against poor and middle-class whites. If you let the illegals become legal, they come to the front not only of the immigration line, but of the employment line because of affirmative action.
So, Hugh, we're talking about the breakdown of the vote. How are the Republicans going to win again?
Get the white vote. If they had 70% of the white vote, or 95%, you know, if whites were like Hispanics and blacks and voted Republican, it would be an overwhelming victory. But Romney and many of the Republican leadership, they favor affirmative action. They favor discrimination against white people. And then until you get a leader who is willing to say we want equal opportunity for all, including whites, I'm afraid the Republicans are in trouble.
So you want the Republicans to have a campaign that focuses exclusively on white people?
Obama talks about where we all play by the same rules. He lies because he favors different rules for different races. Obama talked, remember, in his State of the Union speech, he said this will not apply to those here now, the illegals here now. Someone yelled he lied. He did lie. He's planning to change it for those illegals who are here now.
All right, Dante.
I understand what the caller, I've heard this argument many times. I think if you look at the statistics, it's really hard to argue that white Americans aren't getting a fair shake in terms of their share of income. They're wealthier on average than other races in America. They're better educated on average than most races in America, than the other races that are out there. So it's a tough argument to make. I also think it's a road to it. I mean, it's an interesting idea. I think it's a road to a permanent minority for the GOP, because the fact of the matter is the minority populations are growing.
Yes.
And the white population. The white electorate whites were 72% of the electorate now. That's good, that obviously, in terms of, you know, that's the majority of the electorate, but they were 81% of the electorate in just 2000. That means in 12 years they've declined by 9%, the part of the electorate they are. To play just to the declining part of the electorate is a road to being a permanent minority, I mean, in my opinion.
Do you think that it's difficult for some segment of this population, our population, to deal with that, the fact that we're not as white as we used to be and we're not going to be as white down the road? Is that problematic for people?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I really do think for some people out there, it's tough to accept. I think that, but it, you know, it's just going to be the reality. I mean, and sometimes, you know, first of all, I don't think there's anything, just to make clear, I don't think there's anything to fear. This is what the country is. It's
right.
Changing. The country changes. Right. That's what the United States is. That's what makes the United States a great country, is the fact that we change and we grow. But if you're scared of it, there's really very little you can do. This is what happens. If you're having a hard time with it, then you're having a hard time with it. But I don't know what to tell you. This is the reality of what the country is.
Yeah. Let's go to an email from Chuck in Green Bay. Did the GOP get it wrong, or did they really know what was happening and put a good face on it? They could hardly brag that they were behind in the polls just before the election. Do you think that the extreme right will get tossed out, as most people are in the middle?
Well, the extreme right won't get tossed out of the House, because if you have an extreme right district, then you're actually right in the right spot. I think the Romney campaign was selling stuff that they wanted people to believe, because that's what you do. You want to be the campaign that has momentum. Look, we're going to win. But people like Michael Barone, who I really have respected, he does not, that's not his job. His job is to be right. And if you look at the numbers, he's a journalist. And as a journalist, I don't care what your personal beliefs are. You look at the numbers and you try to make an honest assessment of what the situation is. And if you don't, you lose. Because in the end, you have something out there saying something that was just completely wrong, and it means that in the future, people are less likely to trust you. That's all you have as a journalist.
Yeah. Dick in Oak Creek, hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
I'm really glad I was able to follow you. He really kind of typifies what I'm thinking. I heard Richard Viguerie this morning say that the reason Romney lost was because he wasn't conservative enough, which I think is pretty moronic, but I'm just kind of wondering what your guest thinks about the what's going to happen. There will be a fight in the Republican Party, and I suspect that the extremists will win. You know, and it's good, because being a good Democrat, I want the extremists to be in, because they aren't going to win the election.
I think
about that.
Well, the first thing I'd argue is, I don't care if you're a good Democrat or a good Republican, you shouldn't want a weak Republican Party, because in the end, it's bad for everybody. The country is best served when you have two vital parties that are intelligent and saying intelligent things and offering solutions. There's nothing wrong with one party. The problem is if one party is the party of no. It's not a problem if one party looks at what the other one says and then says, okay, some of this I can live with, but you need to adjust it here, here, and here. That's the way politics is supposed to work, and it's just not the way it can work right now. I think that, look, in terms of the Republican bloodletting, it's coming. It's already begun. I was working Tuesday night. I got an email before Romney had even announced it even made the concessions, which took a while. But immediately after Obama was forecast as the winner, I got an email from Tea Party Nation telling me that, well, what do you expect? Romney wasn't our guy anyway. We knew he was. And that was like within minutes of this being announced. So, yeah, no, the bloodletting is coming on the GOP, from the GOP, and it's going to be tough. I mean, it's really going to be something to watch, because I don't know who's going to win, because there are at least four factions I could think of within the GOP that are going to be fighting. And it's going to be, it's really the next year. That's what the next year is going to be about.
Dick, thanks very much. One more call. It'll have to be quick. Chris in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi.
Go ahead, please.
I was just curious, with this being the most expensive election, why somebody doesn't come up with an idea where a percentage of the money, like say every $100 is spent, the dollar goes towards, you know, hunger or homeless or something, to, you know, kind of give back a little bit.
That's an idea I can definitely get behind. But it's those people who invest those millions and billions of dollars want their money to go, and in some cases it wasn't nearly billions, but hundreds of millions of dollars want their money to go to getting their man elected. But I'd be all for that idea.
What a great idea that is.
We have enough money swimming around out there.
Unbelievable amounts. And you got the feeling at the end that they just had too much money. It wasn't effective anymore. Let's just buy up some more and let's run 5 minutes of ads, and they're the same ads.
That's what that Pennsylvania, that's what that big push to Pennsylvania was about at the end for Romney. And like, it's like, well, what's he doing? It's, they had a ton of money.
Oh,
everybody had a
I
ton
know.
Of money, and what the heck? Why might as well
I
try
know.
To put it in play.
There's something wrong about that when
yeah.
we have so many problems. Oh, Dante, thanks again.
Thanks for having me on. Always fun.
Yeah, it is fun. Thank you. Dante Chinney is a journalist, creator of the multimedia project Patchwork Nation. And if you go to Patchwork Nation, you'll get just a whole wealth of analysis. Interesting analysis that you don't hear. When he looked at those wealthiest counties voting for Obama, that was a new piece of information. So there's a lot of new information at his blog, and we thank him for being with us. Thanks to Brett Jaspers and Rhonda Fanning, who produced this program. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls. We will have news coming up momentarily, and then we'll talk about an issue that maybe we didn't hear much of in the campaign, but we're going to hear a lot more about in the coming days.